I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to Off the Beat and Track Podcast. I'm your host, I'm Stu Whiffin. It's another week, therefore it's another episode. Today's episode, I sit down with actor Nick Blood and you're in for a treat. Nick's zoomed in via the means of Zoom. Is that a thing? Do you zoom in on Zoom? Joined me on Zoom from where he's based in LA, and we have a lovely chat. We go in on Morrissey some of the things that he's been saying that have, you know, divided a lot of opinion on him via Smiths fans, me being one of those. And then we go into some talk of skateboarding, and what you will get is some really, really great music chat. Nick's got impeccable taste, and he's a lovely gent, and we have a wonderful chat. So a few thanks. Thanks to Scroobius Pip and everybody at the Distraction Pieces Network. Very proud to be part of that. So big love to Pip. Big thanks to 76 for producing this podcast. Thanks to you lot for continuing to just be nice and listen and share and tweet and message and just be nice peeps. I'm so lucky. I get to have these chats with so many amazing creative people, and I get to do what I like doing, which is talking about records and asking people about their lives and their creative journeys. And it's so nice that yous listen. So thank you. If it is your first time listening and you like hearing actors talking about their life and music, then go and have a look in the archives, because you can hear me talking to Maxine Peake, Joe Hartley, Michael Smiley, Amanda Abington, Thomas Turgoose, the list goes on, Ali Cook. Go have a rummage in the archives, because you'll find some ace listens. And music-wise, then, yeah, there's hundreds of episodes with all your favourite musicians, from the Foo Fighters to Fatboy Slim to Sway to Idols, to James Lavelle. Go get stuck in, because there's some ace chats to be enjoyed. You can support the podcast simply by just giving it a share. If you see us on the socials, giving us a follow, subscribing, or better still, join the Patreon. It costs you 79p a month, and that 79p will give you access to a further few hundred episodes and radio shows. You can watch all the episodes. You can go and see my my big melon head light up every time somebody mentions a lovely record. And all of that is at Patreon, which is like a little kind of social media thing. If you've never been over there, you get like a little feed and I upload stuff on it, and you can go through the archives and such. And like I say, it's $1 a month. So 79p, something like that. You can find out about that at patreon.com/offthebeatentrack, or better still, the easiest place to remember is the website, and it's got links to all the socials, Patreon, and everything else you need to know, a little bit of merch, and you can find out about that at www.offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. Right. Onwards. Please enjoy today's episode with the wonderful Nick Blood. Sorry, I've interrupted the podcast, but with good reason. Hotel Chocolat are our sponsors. You know that now because I tell you about it every episode. But they've been super kind now. And you may have heard me talking about the products from the cacao bar. And there's gins, cream liqueurs, all sorts of wonderful chocolatey goodies. And what they've done is they've set a page up on the website that you can go to. And all you've got to do is just for you off the beaten track listeners, go over there, answer a question, and you could win the full range delivered to your front door. I mean, that's kind of them. All you have to do is go to this place, hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. That's OTBT as in off the beaten track podcast. hotelchocolat.com/OTBT podcast. Go get your grubby little mitts on some deliciously chocolatey drinks, courtesy of our sponsors, Hotel Chocolat. I'll get back to the podcast.
It's Off the Beaten Track podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stew Whippin.
Okay, we are recording. Nick, how you doing?
I'm doing all right, thank you, mate. Yeah, it's a little bit early here, but I say early. I mean, 8 a.m. isn't that early, is it? But
so where are you right now?
I'm in LA at the moment.
Nice. Working?
Yeah. Well, I was just working, and now I am settling back into LA life. Kind of, I've spent the past few years, well, pre-pandemic, kind of spending half the year here, half the year in London, but haven't been back since COVID kicked off. So it's been nice just catching up with friends, eating lots of burritos, far too many burritos, and enjoying the sunshine. Yeah, not complaining.
Lovely. How did you find? So you was in LA for the pandemic for the lockdown?
No. I was in London for that. I was I got back to London about a couple of weeks before it really started to ramp up. But it was right at the end of February, where we were all still thinking, oh, this is something that happens elsewhere. And then was in the UK and unable to travel back to the States until just recently.
How did you find lockdown in the UK?
Initially, I was kind of like, so I was up in Liverpool originally when it was all kicking off. And it was just that, you know, obviously that gradual thing of things just amping up day by day. And weirdly, I was listening to a podcast with John Ronson, and I think it was Louis Theroux. It might have been interviewing him, but was asking how he coped with it, because he's kind of talked a lot about his anxiety and, you know, issues like that. And he said, well, weirdly, I feel like I've been preparing for this my whole life, like preparing for disaster. And I've definitely got a bit of that in me, where like I'm prone to like anxiety and stuff. And I think I was just kind of quite like, right, I know the parameters here. Like it's very clear what the problem is and what I have to do about it. So I felt quite like capable to deal with it, because I'm fairly organized and was just kind of like, as long as I know the I guess like the rules, I'm like, right, I can work with this.
Yeah.
So felt fairly kind of comfortable initially. Obviously, and just kind of grateful, just felt really lucky that I was in a position where I wasn't stuck in a flat with multiple other people.
Yeah.
My family were all safe and sound. So just felt kind of fortunate, really, for the most part of it. And then, of course, after a while, it's just such an unnatural situation. Me and my girlfriend were, you know, locked down together, and we've always, because she's American and I'm, you know, obviously British, and we've always been used to having to spend chunks of time apart. But this was like obviously the opposite of it. You're just like solidly with each other every second of the day, which is kind of unnatural. So of course, like everybody, you have your moments of tension and so on. But I think we dealt with it on the whole pretty well. Like we're both quite like, right, if there's an issue, face it head on and stuff. And then there was definitely a point where it started to get to me. I kind of had a bit of a meltdown. I guess it would have been towards the end of the summer. I think it was just that build up of tension. You're worrying about work stuff, because increasingly you're thinking how and when is, you know, or if you're, my industry is going to get back up and running again. Yeah. So it kind of reached a bit of crescendo towards the end of the summer, and I realized I needed to take care of myself a bit more, and, you know, my mental health and stuff, and health wise as well. I'm sure, like, you know, like most people can relate to this, that, you know, unless you're sober, it became a little too easy to just reach for the drinks cabinet earlier.
Mate, when it started, it just felt Because, I don't know, the way I viewed it when it just first started was like, well, this, you know, this is the world. This will be done in a couple of weeks, and normal service will resume. So I'm going to go airport rules with my drinking and literally just holiday because the sun was shining in the UK. And then I think after about 7 weeks of airport rules, I thought, you know what? I think I need to have a little look at this. It's getting a little bit bad. But I think, you know, it was
because you had to release that tension
completely.
Yeah, and I definitely felt that it was like I'd be quite organised during the week and kind of like, you know, exercise and I'd keep, you know, get outside and then keep myself kind of busy. And then at the end of the week, you just had all that tension built up and it was just like right, and it was like holiday time, a little party in the apartment. And,
absolutely. Well. Let's start the playlist. And so I'm going to ask you, please, Nick, to tell me the song that you regard as having the greatest ever intro, please.
Yeah, so I funny enough, that I'd made, like, this was the one where I had a few different options. And
you can have some honourable mentions, Nick. You can for a couple of
Right, well, it was mainly Manchester bands,
that's great.
I realised. So apart from The Who, I'd kind of like put down Babar O'Reilly by The Who. And then it was like I Am the Resurrection by Stone Roses, Blue Monday, New Order. And Love Will Tear Us Apart, Joy Division. So what I did was I just played each of them in a row, and then the one which I've chosen is the one which just immediately made my heart sing, which is This Charming Man by The Smiths.
Oh, glorious, 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 glorious. Yeah. I actually saw New Order Saturday at the O2.
Oh, did you?
Mate. They encored with Atmosphere, then Transmission, and closed with Love Will Tear Us Apart. And it was fucking off the scale.
Mate. Atmosphere as well. That must have been amazing.
Like, they just threw Blue Monday in about track six. And it was like, you don't start throwing Blue Monday around track six. That's your encore. But they've got so many. Yeah, we got Temptation, Bizarre Love Triangle, we've got everything. It was blinding, mate. And
it is kind of nuts when you look at their back catalogue and then you take into consideration Joy Division as well. Yeah. You're like, how does this happen? I mean, the fact that they were able to resurrect themselves after, you know, what happened, like, it's just kind of incredible. And then reinvent themselves, just become this whole new thing. And
and arguably, you know, kind of have a massive point in, you know, the direction of electronic music, like, you know, absolute pioneers. Yeah. But we're here to talk about the guitar genius of Johnny Marr, which is one of my favourite things to do. So what I want to ask first is, we've had this conversation now. I'm smothered in Smith's tattoos. They're my what one you got? Oh,
is it?
Lovely.
Still ill.
I've got that one there.
Oh, mate. Kindred spirits.
Absolutely, mate. Absolutely. The thing that... How are you dealing? Can you separate the music from the man? Because I don't know how much you're picking up on it, you know, when you're out in LA. And I believe Morrissey lives in LA, doesn't he?
Not anymore. He did for a while, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, but not anymore.
Because I know people that are diehard Morrissey fans that are really struggling to deal with some of the things that he's been saying, which personally I find bananas because he's that guy that's... He's there championing, you know, the outsiders and he's the guy you go to, and like to see some of that stuff that he's been, you know, quoted as saying, like, I find really odd and it's disappointing. And I just wondered how you can. I mean, I still listen to the Smiths, and I have to distance the man from the art, and I listen to the music and I love the music.
Yeah.
I just wonder what your take is on that.
I can absolutely separate the artist from the art, and I sort of don't think it's my place to judge someone's political views. There's also, to some degree, there is an argument to say, well, you know, on the one hand, I think it's kind of crazy that we look to pop stars to tell us how to run the world. So why should Morrissey be any different?
Mm-hmm.
And the music gives me so much joy and speaks to me in such a way. And that's Morrissey as well, that I you know, in the same way that, you know, there's suggestions Shakespeare did some sketchy things with underage boys, you know, if you believe some of the theories behind the sonnet. So what are we meant to do about what are we meant to do about that?
It goes so on through artists, yeah, and all sorts of things, you know. I think you have to separate.
Yeah, I also, you know, like, obviously I'm aware of stuff that he said, but I kind of, one thing I do always admire about him, and part of the reason why artists like him stand out to me, is because they don't care what anyone thinks. Mm. And I think that it's a rare quality nowadays, that to have people that say, I'm not going to toe the line, I'm not going to say what everybody wants me to say. And I don't know how many people are listening to what Morrissey says and going out and causing anybody grief on the streets. I don't think he's like that. And also, I just kind of think if you sat down with him, the other thing is, you know, I think when you hear people that know him talk about him, I don't hear anybody say a bad word about him, you know, that are friends with him and so on, that are people which I respect their opinion. And I think he's a provocateur. So I think 100%. That there's an element of what he says, which is testing people's ability to dissect the discourse, which people don't want to do. So although there are some things which are, I think, quite hard to see another side to, there's equally things that he said, which I think when you break it down, we're so sensitive to anything that involves certain trigger words that the moment someone mentions any of those, we're all up in arms. And I there's part of me that feels like Morrissey knows that. And it's almost like he says something which he knows is going to be interpreted controversially and sits back and just goes, see, I told you the media are idiots. But as far as his kind of specific political views, it's not really any of my business.
Yeah.
And, you know, unless he's going to put out a song which is grossly offensive to me, which I wouldn't listen to, then I just don't see it's my place to. I mean, if he didn't say anything about his political views, you know, or if no one asked him those questions, none of us would know, none of us would care. I mean, I'd, you know, when you think about, say, what Take That got involved with, all the tax scandal, which one of their group, I believe, might have even quit the band because of it, but it flagged up that this was possibly not legal. I could be completely off the mark here, but that was my kind of reading of it. And you go, well, none of us have a problem with Take That.
Yeah. Yeah, but I guess because they've never courted the media the way that Morrissey did. Morrissey's always played the media and never played the game. And that's, I guess, you know, that's what makes him interesting. That's what, you know, makes him different from so many other people. And he doesn't play the game insofar as, like, nobody knows what Morrissey's having for breakfast. Nobody knows what, you know, what Morrissey does. Nobody knows anything about him. And that, in the, you know, in the time of social media, it's fascinating that you can still have people that are so famous yet still really guarded and private. Find that fascinating.
And the fact that his music holds up, it's like he doesn't need to do any of this. He can say things which might upset people and it doesn't matter because people love his music so much. I'm curious, actually, what because one of the things that I remember, there was somebody I know who kind of said something quite derogatory about Morrissey, and I was like, what are you basing that on? And they didn't really have an answer. It was just some vague kind of understanding they'd got through reading probably third, fourth hand information. So I'm curious, when you ask that question, what is there anything specific that you're referencing?
No, there was obviously the wearing of a pin badge that was aligned to, you know, a kind of sort of right wing group. I mean, the Smiths come up in this podcast a hell of a lot for obvious reasons, because they're so fucking great.
Yeah, of course.
And then that's generally laced with the sort of sentence that goes, but yeah, it's a bit strange now what he's been saying. So I just kind of wanted to get your stance on it, because we've also had, you know, Michael Jackson comes up a hell of a lot in this podcast. Mm. And again, it's like, can you separate the man from the music, you know, the art from the art? And I'm always fascinated because I can. And it's just, I'm always, you know, I know people that I was speaking to one of the guys in the Kooks, and he said that he was a concert in Hyde Park. I think Stevie Wonder played a Michael Jackson record, and he said, "I just went home." And I was like, "What?"
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass?" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
That felt
I don't understand what the point of that is. I'm like, what is it you want to do? Is it you want to stop people listening to this artist's music so you can take away their income? Or is it their opportunities? Is it their quality of life because they might enjoy playing live? I don't quite understand what the end game of it is. Yeah. What's the point? So I'm meant to feel ashamed for liking somebody whose politics doesn't directly align with my own or with yours. Okay, so that person is eradicated from Apple Music or Spotify or whatever. Yeah. What? I'm not quite sure what that achieves. Do you think that's suddenly going to end? You know, they're all going to be holding hands and skipping in the street together because, you can't
erase history, can you? It's there and,
But I just don't get what the end game is. I don't understand what it is it achieves. It's what we're meant to teach our children. Oh, here's the list of banned people and why.
Yeah, avoid.
And that's going to make them better children. I don't get it. And it does, you know, like, I don't think censorship is the way forward, and I think this kind of hyper moralizing is tricky territory, because to be too certain of anything, I think is a dangerous area to be in. You know, anybody that's too certain of something is not in a position to learn or to not being curious about new ideas, which is never a great place to be.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, if the music's good, the music's good. It is as simple as that.
And that's kind of, that's where it starts and finishes.
I can't pretend not to like it.
No,
like
there's no point. It's joyous. Enjoy it.
Yeah. It's like when people say about, I mean, there's so many examples that were just like, if I can't pretend that I don't enjoy it, so what do you want me to do?
If Don't Stop Till You Get Enough comes on, I'm dancing.
Yeah.
Can't help it, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right, I'm going to take you back.
Although I was going...
Go on.
I'm not going to... No, continue.
I want to know now. Where are you going?
No, I can't. I can't say that out loud. Carry on.
Okay. Right, track two. The first song that you remember hearing that had an emotional impact on you, please, Nick.
Well, I had to delve deep for that because I was trying to think... Back, I mean, like that's an early age. I mean, it might have been a nursery rhyme or something, but my first kind of musical obsession when I must have been around 5 or 6 would be my guess, was Elvis Presley. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in the car, you know, going on, you know, camping holidays, it was the Beatles, the Rolling Stones, Stevie Wonder, Elvis Presley were kind of, Paul Simon would kind of be like the albums on rotation, and I got obsessed with Elvis, I used to like do my hair in a quiff, and like, you know, birthdays and Christmas, it was a, you know, a tape of Elvis that I wanted, and would sit there with my first kind of, you know, Walkman on, just listening constantly to Elvis. And I guess the track that really kind of makes me, that I remember having some kind of like, it's kind of also that when you discover like the majesty of music kind of thing, something that can, something unquantifiable that just speaks to your soul and makes your heart kind of like glow, and takes you into another world. And I guess with some of Elvis's stuff, things like, you know, In the Ghetto, and this track, which always on my mind, is that it's like it's a story. So it takes you into this experience, and you're starting to kind of start to interpret an emotion that you wouldn't have at that age had the vocabulary to express, but it was just a feeling, you know. So, always on my mind.
So looking back at that now, what would you align that emotion as being?
Love, longing, that kind of alchemy that happens when you meet somebody. It doesn't have to be romantic. It could be a friendship, but something that magical, that you feel a human connection with somebody. And I guess that's what a lot of music does. It kind of interprets that for us and sings it back to us in a way that makes us feel a connection to the artist, to other people, you know, to each other. Yeah.
You mentioned that a list of bands that you were being exposed to on route to holidays and that. It's so crazy that everybody's go-to for music growing up is the car. It's so weird that everybody aligns it to car journeys. But aside from that, was there music on at home?
I wouldn't say loads. You know, there was my dad was my dad was from Liverpool and grew up in the era of the Beatles. So the Beatles were like the band, but I wouldn't say it was a place where there was constant music playing. It wasn't like it was a musical family. My parents didn't play music or anything like that, you know, instruments. But you know, like a lot of people, like your older brother is a big influence. And my brother's always been a kind of real, I guess, popular culture vulture kind of thing, like, you know, just very interested in film and music and art and so on. So I got a lot of my influences through him. So I kind of got into the first kind of, you know, when I was, you know, as you get a bit more independent and you're searching out the music for yourself, it was Nirvana when I was about 11 or 12. And that would have been I probably got into that through like Metallica and things like that my brother was listening to. But yeah, I wouldn't say in our household, it was car journeys.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a shame now because I see my nieces and nephews and they'll all have, you know, like a tablet stuck to the back of their headrest in front and everything. And it actually makes you think when I have kids, it's going to try and keep it music and stuff in the car.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. I had this experience a little while ago and I just find it really weird that I did actually have one of the most amazing experiences of my life, and certainly as a parent a couple of weeks ago. I've tried not to kind of influence my kids on music because I'm a sort of venue owner and I you know, nightclubs and stuff. So my whole world has always been music, and I've tried not to kind of impose my obsession and nerdy kind of music love on them. And so they've kind of just, you know, they're like most kids now, there's not much tribalism in music. So they, you know, they like a bit of everything. But my youngest was walking home from college the other day and she phoned me. She went, "I actually think I like Big Mouth Strikes Again more than This Charming Man." And I thought, fuck me, my work's done. Like, I was welling up, Nick. I was literally like, fucking hell. That's it. I've succeeded as a parent.
Mate, good job. I've tried with my nieces and nephews. I've certainly tried to influence her, but I do have good memories of like my nephew Charlie, like bouncing around on trampoline with him, listening to Crystal Fighters, which he loved when he was like three, just bounced around. And then also memories of them jumping around, listening to Frankly, Mr. Shankly.
Lovely.
And Vicar in a Tutu, which made them giggle. But yeah. My niece Georgia, she's got back. My brother's bang into his kind of like punk and a lot of American punk, and she's got well into that. And who's she going to see? I think she's going to. She's only like 10, and she's. I think they're taking to see Dropkick Murphys in the new year or something. Yeah, she's banging to Dropkick Murphys. So, yeah, he's done well.
And it's really because the thing that blows my mind about car journeys, I was just driving along and I had the iPod on shuffle and at the time I think my girls must have been, I don't know, like 15 and 12. And Aztec Camera's Summer in My Heart come on, right? Which I think that's a perfect pop record, right? And they were singing it. And I was like, how do you know this song? And they're like, oh, just know it. And like, and it just struck me that like, I've never really played that to them before. And I do think there's some weird kind of little stream that some songs just find that like ingrain themselves into the fabric and just kind of find their way. Do you know what I'm trying to say? It sounds like
I know what you mean. Yeah. Where you don't really know where they came from, or when you've heard them or listened to them, you just know them. I find that with a, you know, I think New Order have a bit of that, but there's certain tracks where people just know them.
Yeah.
And they don't know, you know, it would have been a band that my girlfriend wouldn't have known the name New Order, but she knew a bunch of their songs.
Yeah.
You know, there's no idea where she'd have come across them. Yeah, they just kind of become ingrained in the culture, don't they?
I hope it's that, and I hope like they don't just go, we're just trying to kind of keep the old man happy. We just hear that shit on TikTok all the time.
I do like, I tell you what, the Good Morning Britain, Aztec Camera. That's with Mick Jones. Yeah, that's a banger. That's a favourite of mine. Yeah,
lovely stuff. Right, well, in the formative years, we are going to stay for track three, and I'm going to ask you for the song that reminds you of your time at school, please, Nick.
Yeah, that was so. When I was at school, it was when Blur v Oasis was like the biggest thing, you know, on the top line on the news, 9 o'clock news and stuff. But I wasn't really into that at that time. My journey had kind of been Nirvana and kind of lots of grunge bands, Dinosaur Jr., Sonic Youth and stuff. And then I'd kind of segued via Beastie Boys, which I think a lot of kind of white boys from the suburbs probably did, that then kind of opened up the door to hip hop and, you know, getting into kind of like things like Run DMC and so on. And then I remember the Wu-Tang record coming out and listening to that for the first time and being like, what is this? This is so dark. And kind of being like slightly scared by it. And then opening up all these other avenues into you know, hip hop and kind of more beat based, you know, stuff like Ninja Tune and Mowax records and so on. So while all this indie stuff was going on, I was like, nah, I'm too cool for that. And was listening to kind of more obscure, you know, going through our local record shop, flicking through, you know, these obscure little record label sections. Subsequently, later on, when I started working at record shop, that's when I really got into Oasis and stuff, because there's a lad there, Jamie, who was banging into Oasis. So that kind of opened up that doorway to me. And then kind of through the more beat-based stuff, you get into more electronic and dance. And then Stone Roses had that crossover, which I absolutely love as well. But yeah, around kind of school days, it was more kind of hip hop influence stuff. And then it was through skateboard videos discover lots of new music and, you know, some classic music as well, like old soul records and stuff that just completely were unaware of. And this track, Dr. Octagon, Bear Witness, which I think he was on Ninja Tune.
Yeah.
Might have been, I think so. Yeah. But he's Cool Keith, you know, and then Dr. Doom and stuff, this guy. But yeah, that was on, was Flynn Trotman's part, I'm pretty sure, in the Blueprint video. I can't remember which Blue, but Panic Blueprint, like a British skateboard company, and they had like all the best British skaters. And I'm pretty sure it was Flynn Trotman's section that he had this track on, Dr. Octagon, Bear Witness. It's just a banger. And we were kind of discovering, like, you know, scratch DJing and all this sort of stuff. And I'm trying to think who was the DJ on this. It was somebody quite big, actually. But I can't think who it was, who was like the producer DJ on it. But I can't think who it was, yeah.
It's so important. And I've spoke about this a few times. I had the lads from Dirty Sanchez on a year or so ago. And we was talking about the importance of skate videos introducing you to music as much as anything else. And it was like...
Yeah.
That any time one of us would go to Camden and get our hands on, like, you know, from Camden Market, we'd get a skate video and we'd bring it home and it'd be like, what's this tune? You couldn't Shazam anything then. You was just waiting till the credits, you could see what it was, and it was like, oh man, what a tune. And it would introduce me to so much American music that I didn't know about. Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah. I mean, there was things where you were kind of like, there was bands that I was aware of, but it never really listened to, that you'd be like, oh, hold on. I mean, Black Sabbath, I think, on a Zero video with Jamie Thomas, that was kind of like, oh, okay. Got into Black Sabbath. And
yeah.
In fact, actually, Pritchard would have been on that video with Flynn Trotman. Yeah. He was on the Panic team. Funny enough, I watched the clip of Dirty Sanchez not that long ago. And I remember having a night out with a couple of those guys a long time ago, which you can imagine was a complete... just litany of craziness. Yeah, those guys are just nuts. Who did you have on?
I had Dayton do this podcast, but I had another podcast where it's called Hardcore Listing, where people come on and they pick a topic and do a top five. And this is like my little kind of studio, but it's a little kind of garden bar.
Nice.
So Pritch and Date come round and done top five of their most rock and roll moments, which...
Oh, mate.
I mean, for those that haven't listened, that ever want to listen to that, I'll just give you a rough insight of what you're going to get. You're going to get Pritchard getting arrested, getting off of an aeroplane after urinating out of his mind on tranquilizers, urinating on Dolph Lundgren. Let that sink in.
my mate Willard, actually, who lives out here now, I can't remember what it was, some skateboard festival competition thing. And when we used to work for the skateboard company, we were there with those guys, from the skate company we worked for. And a mate of mine went, I found a roll of gaffer tape. And was like, right, come here. And Willard sat on this chair. So grabbed and taped him to the chair and then carried him on top of the fun box, which is like a ramp where it's like four-sided, ramp kind of thing in the middle of this, whole kind of skate setup, stuck him on top of it. And then Pritchard grabs his board, bombs it up this ramp, comes back down. And then I can't remember what he did. He did a kickflip or something over Willard on top of his fun box, hit him, and Willard just is taped his chair and just starts wobbling and tumbles down off it. And it's in the credits of Dirty Sanchez. It's in the opening incredible. Credits of Dirty Sanchez. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. So in regards to school, was it something you enjoyed?
I did actually, yeah.
Where was it?
In Aylesbury. Yeah. School, it was just, I was like, you just get to hang out with your mates all day. I never wanted to bunk off because I was like, well, you just get to, just all day hanging out with your mates. So, I found school fairly easy kind of thing. I didn't have to work too hard and I'd get by fine. So I just kind of had fun with my mates all day. It was just, what more do you want, really?
Absolutely. Did you know what you wanted to
be? It was just a laugh. Yeah, I knew from a really early age. Yeah, I knew from very young that's what I wanted to be. It just, I didn't come from a family where anyone was an actor or knew anyone that was an actor. So it took me a while to work out how you became an actor, really. So it was, I didn't go to drama school till I was I think I was probably 24. To went to drama school, which is fairly late, because it just took me a while to find out that's how you could go about it. I knew from the age of seven.
Standing them formative years, then first song you were buying from a record shop, Nick?
Yeah, Kiss, God Gave Rock and Roll to You, which which came in the picture disc, the Bill and Ted picture disc.
Nice.
I would have listened to that over and over and over and over again. Yeah, it was Bill and Ted that opened that up to me, which was a film which I loved as a kid. Used to play Bill and Ted. I'm not quite sure how you play Bill and Ted, but I remember playing Bill and Ted and dressing up as them for a fancy dress party and stuff. But yeah, it was Kiss, God Gave Rock and Roll to You, which is an absolute tune.
Absolutely.
I think the first kind of one when it was more going out and buying my own music when I was kind of into music rather than it being through, a film, whatever, would have been Offspring, self-esteem.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it was a blue vinyl 7-inch.
Yeah,
that was the first one, which was like, with my pocket money, I'm going out and buying a record. Yeah.
Nice.
What was yours?
The first record I got given, see, I'm not going to try and make, because I got given this, so, and it was more novelty, but it was a David Bowie record, but it was The Laughing Gnome, which my nan got for me and would have just seen it as a novelty fun record, which it is. But that was the first one I got. But the first one I bought, I'm quite old, I'm 48, so the first record I bought was a video called The Radio Star. And
nice.
It's a good little pop tune, so it's not too cool, but yeah, I've been quite lucky. On I was saying to a guest the other day that that's the question where you can't be cool, and I was worried when I started this podcast. I mean, you know, going back a few years, the second ever guest I had on was Russell Lissack from Block Party. And and I thought, right,
great band.
Oh, what a band. And I thought, right,
great band.
What's Russell going to pick?
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns. Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Because, you know, he's a super cool guy, super cool guitarist. He's going to try and... He's probably going to tell me the first record he bought was some fucking obscure John Peel sessions. And he just went... The Levi's had Stiltskin. I thought, fucking get him. He chose one of the shittiest records ever. And I thought, brilliant. That set the benchmark for the rest of this podcast. So, yeah. No one can have a cool one.
No. I mean, yeah, Bill and Ted, Picture Disc of Kisses. But do you know, actually, that's one of the things I loved about the questions for the songs on this, because you couldn't, you know, like, if you would just say, what's your top five songs, you're going to spend your time thinking about what makes me look the coolest, you know. Whereas with this, it was specific, so it just kind of narrows it right down. Yeah. I thought it's a really good way to do it. I liked it a lot. Enjoyed doing it, actually.
Wicked. Well, I'm going to take you clubbing now, Nick, and I want to know, for track five, the song that soundtracked your year's clubbing. And I should always kind of put a little addendum on this, that it doesn't necessarily mean... Shirt Off Ibiza, Lost Summer. It can be local rock club,
dirty indie club.
It can be whatever you want it to be.
Well, my kind of like clubbing years were, it was mainly hip hop stuff. The track I picked was Missy Elliott, Work It. Because it's such a tune. It just gets everybody on the dance floor going for it. Missy Elliott's just really cool. She's got, and that album, is a bit of a classic, really.
100%.
And it just reminds me of like everybody kind of happy, everybody dancing. And there's a friend of mine who most of the nights went to, he DJed at, who's just like this amazing, such a good DJ, just one of those people that can get, you can't quite work it out, but he just gets everybody on the dance floor, everybody going for it. And so Missy Elliott.
Nice. Where was clubbing?
I'd say mainly around kind of Bristol. I was living in Bristol at the time. And when you're kind of that age, kind of, you know, 18 to kind of early 20s, it's just, you're out every opportunity, aren't you?
Yeah.
And that was very much the case. And it would have been all, I mean, Bristol's got a big hip hop scene. Drum and bass as well would have been a part of it. But I was never like, I really enjoyed drum and bass nights and certain records and stuff. I wasn't one of those people that, you know, could name every DJ and stuff. But there was always great gigs on people. You know, you'd get like really cool artists come out. They're not like, you know, just people that you just wouldn't, you know, were not headliners kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, but there's a lot of promoters that would bring out some really cool artists to Bristol. It was always kind of on that map for any kind of hip hop tour that was going on.
And Bristol's entrenched in that, you know, going back before the kind of, you know, your Portishead's and Massive's, like just, you know, going back to the Wild Bunch and all the sound system culture and that, it was huge, wasn't it? Bristol was so pivotal in all of that movement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's got a great music scene and lots of influences from, you know, being a port, essentially. It's kind of like right on the water. You've got that influence of all kind of different cultures coming in. And yeah, you know, you've got like various different kind of like big events and festivals and stuff that go on there that are all, you know, that you go down to St. Paul's during the carnival and everything. You've got all those sound systems out still. You've got some great clubs doing lots of kind of reggae and dub. It's a good place to go and a good place to go check out music. And it's kind of no wonder there's, you know, like all those artists you mentioned and Ronnie Size and so on that come out of there. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to take you home now for track 6 and a favourite song from an artist from your home county, please.
Yeah, so I kind of had to cheat a little bit here because I don't think my home county doesn't produce that many artists by looks, because I had to like Google like who is there from the locale. So I had considered Silver Bullet.
Oh.
Yeah, 20 Seconds to Comply, who was, I'm pretty sure it was from Aylesbury, and that song like charted and stuff.
Huge.
It was kind of one of the first British hip hop acts. And actually when you listen to it, it's kind of got like, it actually, I remember when I was younger being kind of aware of the Silver Bullet character, and then I got a copy of the 7-inch record and it sounded kind of dated, but weirdly when you listen to it now, it doesn't. It sounds quite current. It's kind of got like I don't know, it's quite dirty and kind of just
a massive sense of urgency about it, that record.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I kind of consider that, but not that that's like one of my top songs, but Ian Dury, although he's from Camden, he lived in the area for a bit, so I kind of cheated a little bit with this one and picked Spasticus Autisticus by Ian Dury.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah, and just it's just so good. And I love just the kind of the punk attitude of him, and that, you know, with, you know, doing a song with his, you know, his own disabilities or whatever. I think this track, there was something where he'd been asked to be like an ambassador for, you know, like the Spastic Society or something, and he'd put forward this song and they were horrified by it. But I like the fact that he was taking ownership of this thing which was used to abuse people, and just completely taking ownership of these words. And I would think that gives people courage to just go, this is what I am, and I don't care what you think, and I'm not going to shy away from it. I'm going to embrace it. Just what a guy.
Am I right in saying that when the UK hosted the Olympics, did somebody perform that at the opening ceremony?
I don't know, actually.
I think that.
Really?
I don't think it was Baxter. But somebody did, and I can't think who it was. And I'm sure
I'm going to have to look this up.
Yeah. But I had Baxter on the podcast, and I caught him on a day when he was really happy to talk about growing up and what it was like.
Yeah, it was. Sorry, jumping. Yeah, it was. Yeah, yeah.
Who performed it?
Let's have a look. Sly and Robbie back Jamaican dance rhythm pop song. I know that's about the. I don't know. I'd have to. I'm going to end up just sitting here reading this, and it's just going to be silence while I try and work out who it was. Sorry, go on.
I don't know. Was it Madness perform it? Maybe Madness did, because they were there for that. Anyway, yeah, what an artist, and it's really interesting. I was, you know, anytime you have a guest on that kind of has a sort of a strong regional accent, you know, I had someone on yesterday saying that when they first heard like Glass Vegas, it was the first time they'd heard someone, you know, singing how they spoke, and for me as a kid, hearing Ian Dury and hearing Billy Bragg, I was like,
yeah,
oh, these people talk like my mates talk, like,
yeah, you know,
they're not putting on an accent. It is,
yeah,
that's their style. And oh man, Ian Dury, absolutely incredible.
It's just so kind of like danceable as well. A lot of his stuff, you can, you know, it's music for the dance floor to get people dancing. And just what a character. I just love that. You know, and again, it's kind of like we said a little bit, like similar to, so like with Morrissey, it's just that rebel, that outsider is just unashamedly themselves. And there's something really compelling about that. 100%. And I find that a lot of kind of people I admire, it's where they don't necessarily have to be, you know, perfect. It's just that they're quite unashamedly themselves.
Completely, completely. Mm. Last track, you get to play Tastemaker DJ and introduce somebody to a song that you think they may not know that you would like them to hear, please, mate.
Okay, so the song is by a band called Friendship, and it's called The Graveyard Shift. And the reason why I picked this is because it's two of my mates talking about Block Party earlier. So Dan, it's just two of them, that you know, this band called Friendship. So there's Dan and Willard. And Dan actually was in a band called Red Jetson, who were kind of this sort of like quite shoegazy kind of a band that supported Block Party back in the day, and I think there might have been label mates with them as well. And we went on tour with my mates back with his band Red Jetson. At the end of the tour, it was the we'd gone to like Ireland with them when they were supporting Block Party. It was just as Block Party blew up, and then the final gig was at Brixton Academy. It was like Block Party's first like huge kind of like
amazing
gig in London, which is great fun. So then Dan went on to form this band Friendship with my mate Willard, and they kind of would make, it's just two of them, they'd make live loops of the music to kind of build it up. So and I actually managed them briefly for a while. So we kind of around the time this video was made as well. So it's a really cool video that two friends of ours directed. And we just kind of got a group of mates together, got the most colourful clothes that we could pull out of our wardrobes, and made this video for like £100. And it's a really cool video. You can find it on YouTube. And it's just a banger of a track. Like, they were a really kind of brilliant band. There's another track I love for theirs called Lifeguard. And like Steve Lamacq was into them, played them on Radio 1 and stuff. And they got a decent amount of radio play. But they just could never get off their asses and make music quick enough. Partly because there was just two of them, partly because they're, you know, very sort of particular about their taste, it would just take them forever. And then because there was just two of them on stage creating live loops for each song and stuff, there'd be some disasters live. So it was kind of such a shame, because I loved them as a band, really felt they could have gone somewhere. They were like, had a bit of the Foles, you know, early Foles stuff, were very kind of dancey indie music. Yeah, really, really good track, highly recommended. The shoot that we did for the artwork was really cool as well. If you see the artwork, it's basically like this autopsy thing. So we got our friend Faye, you know, all this makeup and blood and kind of prosthetics and stuff, and did this cool little photo shoot. And then I got have you ever heard of Various Production?
Yep.
Yeah, so I worked with one of the guys, Nat, and I said to him, oh, you know, would you be up for remix? And so he did a really cool remix of it that's on the 7-inch. Yeah, definitely. Just one of those bands which I just wish there was an album or two of theirs, but there's only just a few tracks.
Well, people can go and check it out, because we put together a Spotify playlist next to accompany the podcast, so people can go and listen to all of the tracks that we've had a natter about today. Out of lockdown and back to a sense of normality that seems a bit more connected and more positive than where we was at last year. What are you looking forward to personally from the rest of this year, mate? And what's happening professionally?
Freedom. I feel very, very fortunate to be able to get out to the States. I mean, I know they've opened it up now, but I got here a few weeks ago on a visa waiver to do some work, which I felt very fortunate for, and go and see my girlfriend's parents in Denver because I've not seen them for almost 2 years, and then we're going to do a vacation to Hawaii, and then just getting to, I feel grateful that I can take advantage of that freedom. So I'm enjoying all that. Got a couple of films that will be coming out next year, which will be fun. And then something I've been working on myself, me and Ian DeCastica, who's my best pal that I did Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. with, we're working on something ourselves, which we're going to start pitching next year. But yeah, the main thing is just seeing, I can't wait till Christmas, be around my nieces and nephews. It's the best time of year. I'm loving the sunshine and loving the freedom.
Oh, lovely stuff. And if people want to keep up to speed about all of that stuff, where's the best place to kind of keep up to speed with you, mate?
I mean, I'm not the most active online. I don't have Twitter or anything, but I do have Instagram. So that's probably the best place to is at Nick Disco Blood. That's probably the best place. Yeah.
Blinding. Nick,
or Google.
Nick, it's been a proper joy talking records with
you. Yeah,
mate.
You too, mate. Really enjoyed it.
Impeccable really taste, mate. And it's been an absolute
joy. I'll have to come to one of your club nights at some point.
Absolutely. Whenever you want, mate.
Let me know.
Whenever you want.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a skate. That'd be good.
It might be a disaster, mate. I come back covered in bruises and injured.
All right, mate. Thanks loads, Nick. There you go. What more do you want to talk about? Is there anything else you need to talk about in a music chat? The Smiths, skateboarding, Beastie Boys. You know, it's like, oh, yeah. We spoke New Order. The Bristol music scene. We ticked a lot of boxes, and what a top gent he was. I hope you had, even if you had a fraction of the fun I had having that chat, then you've had a good time. So thanks ever so much for listening. As I mentioned at the beginning, go check out the back catalogue because there's an abundance of smashing listens to be enjoyed. So go and get stuck in, and you can find out about all of that wherever you get your podcasts, or better still, just go and have a little look at the website. offthebeatandtrackpodcast.com. I'm back next time, you bloody lovely lot. In the meantime, be excellent to each other. Much love. I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.
It's Off the Beat and Track Podcast on the Distraction Pieces Network. With me, Stu Whippin.